think my background in stand-up comedy obviously shapes me and how I think about content. And I think, you know, you say a joke and you have to try out that same joke many times before you get it to work. And so if you think about content, you think in a similar way. You can rework your series and your content ideas, learn from your failures, continue to run with what worked, and scrap what didn't.
Hello, and welcome to Talk to July with Chris Savage, the show that's serving up the loudest takes on building businesses, top-notch products, and unforgettable brands. Today, I'm here with Sydney Rafe, a video producer and content creator at CeraVe, who has cracked the code on creating highly engaging organic content. I'm excited to dive into that process with you, but this podcast is called Talking Too Loud, because whenever I get excited about something, I cannot control the volume of my voice. So I have to start the show by asking, Sydney, what's got you talking too loud?
I would say something I can't get out of my ears is trusting your gut, being authentic and being yourself. I think especially like post-grad, like since graduating college, which was a few years ago now, it became louder and louder and has translated throughout my career. When I'm like, what should I do with my life? Like when you're in school, it's so what's the next step, you know, continuing school, getting good grades, working hard. And it was like, what should I do with my career? Like, what should happen? What's most authentic to me? And it led me to pursuing stand-up comedy and having a career there. Yes, I did do that for a bit. And then now in digital marketing. And it's one thing I tell to everyone, especially it translates in all areas of life.
That's awesome. Okay, we're going to go deeper. So tell me, like, people ask you the question, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Did you have an answer?
I wanted to be me. I kind of always had like a little bit of an, for better or worse, out there personality. And I just wanted to keep tapping into that authentic spirit. I know I went to Brown. I know you did as well. And I feel like one thing that I, you know, really learned at Brown is you can be yourself and you can be creative. And, you know, I know that's harder to make a career out of creativity, but it's something I really tried hard to make happen. And it's taken work and it takes risk. And, as I've been on this journey and have developed this career, I was like, be gutsy, be you, kept coming in my ears. And
That's awesome. And
I feel like that's your brand, Savage. Like,
yeah, that's my brand. Very, very strong agreement. I mean, I've tried so many things and when I've made big decisions and I actually haven't trusted my gut, those are almost always the decisions I regret because, you know, it's like if you make a call and it doesn't work out and you didn't trust your gut, it's like doubly painful.
Yeah.
And if you make a call and you trust your gut and it doesn't work out, at least you knew you bet on yourself.
Exactly.
And so it took me a while to really like hone in on that. I'm also interested because it's not every day we have someone on the podcast who also went to Brown. Like one of my experience there was like, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. Like I tried a lot of different majors before finding my way. And it was a very interesting kind of like stressful process because I felt like I had unlimited options.
Yeah.
And then over time I learned like, oh, I should just follow the things I'm like actually excited about and be willing to like change, even if it's something completely different than I was doing before, just because like my excitement is usually a good barometer for like how hard I'm willing to work and like how far I'm willing to take something.
Yeah.
And I'm just kind of wondering your experience with this. Learning to trust your gut. Like, did that happen in school? Did that happen after?
Yeah.
Was there a specific thing that made you kind of realize that?
Definitely there was. So in school, I studied anthropology. I didn't know much about anthropology before coming to Brown. I thought I was going to do psychology. I knew I loved talking to people. It was one of my favorite things. And authentically connecting. I feel like so many people, actually, this was my, now bring me back to my application of when I applied to college. But I wrote about like late. Like, I feel like so many people are obsessed with, you know, fitting into a box and certain labels. And I feel like everyone is, you know, kind of becomes their own person and being authentic and being yourself is the best thing you can possibly do. And then supporting other people in being who they are is another great thing. And so basically when this really started ringing loudly for me was kind of, as you were saying, like at the end of college, when I was thinking about, you know, my career, what am I going to do with my life? I knew I loved interviewing people. I loved getting to know people through anthropology. And I was like, okay, like what else can I do? So I was so stressed at the end of school. I had a few dream companies I wanted to work at, which I ended up actually working at one of them. But I wanted to just be myself. And so I started this YouTube channel. And basically I was doing parody makeup tutorials. And I felt so like alive when I was creating them. I felt like so myself. Of course, sometimes you have that vulnerability hangover where you're like, oh no, I just put that on the internet. Yeah. But being on a campus, you have so much like support around you that it just became fun, you know? My account was called From the Gut of Sid. And it was just like, okay, be myself. And basically after college, I worked on the video team at Refinery 29, got the job like a week before graduating. It was a contract position, but I was like, you know what? I need to do this. It's my dream company at the time. And when I was there, the Be Gutsy, Be You continued becoming louder and louder. And I saw, I mean, it was such a great environment at Refinery 29. There was so much inspiration around me creatively. And I started doing stand-up comedy in New York City. And, you know, I took my jokes from behind the screen, just me in my little like dorm room apartment, to, you know, the stage in New York City, going to open mics each night. And it was the best time, you know, some amazing nights and some really sad nights where I was like, oh no, what am I doing? But yeah, it just kept ringing louder and louder. And, you know, I've taken various jobs like since college and, you know, I've been at L'Oreal, as we said, for the past 2 years now, and it's been great. And I think what's kind of led me to where I am is it's an everyday practice, as I think we were both talking about, but trusting what's inside of you is the most intuitive yet hardest thing to do.
I love that. I want to dig in here. So you took CeraVe's TikTok from 1 million paid views, I believe, to 1 million organic views.
Yeah.
And, that's a large change to go from it all being paid to organic. I have a feeling that a lot, I might know what some of what you're gonna say based on what you're just talking about, following your gut and being authentic. But I want to know, like, how did you do that? And what went into your content strategy there? And was it driven also by this kind of insight?
Yeah. I think, you know, this was my first time kind of in the big corporate world. So the change happened about like a year of me being in there and, you know, something I talked about with my team. And it was a big conversation at the time. You know, we're seeing all these brands on TikTok marketing, short form video marketing is becoming huge. And I think the biggest thing I've learned about being in social media is you always need to be ready to change and to adapt your strategy because it is always changing. And so about a year ago, it was kind of in a place where we were getting a lot of views with some, you know, paid support, of course, as I know many brands do, and has just become the norm. But when I was looking at the comments, I wasn't seeing a whole lot of authenticity, and I wasn't seeing people, I was seeing a lot of comments for sure. The numbers were good, but I wasn't seeing people always interacting with the content at hand, with the videos and our products. And so me and my boss and the team put our minds together and we're like, we're ready to take this risk. And they trusted me to do this. Obviously with the support, you know, I think social media is such a hard job in a way. You need management behind it. You need them to understand it won't be overnight. You need them to take the risk with you. And basically started testing and learning different series that was going to really authentically communicate and get to know our consumers. And it's the biggest lesson. I think it has been an amazing year. It wasn't immediate, but within a few months, we got to a place where, yeah, our views are now reaching what they were when we were putting paid behind it. And better yet, you know, I think it was Gary Vee that said this. You can have like, of course, you know, as somebody in this world, I do look up to Gary Vee, but he said that you can have, you know, just being like a micro influencer, you can have, you know, 10 or 20 fans that are going to buy your products. And that's better than having like 100 people. This wasn't exactly what he said, but this is the gist. 100 people who are your fans, but aren't going to be so passionate that they're going to buy your products. And yeah. I think that's the mentality I applied.
That's super cool. It's sort of like the casual, I think when I think about podcasts, similarly, it's like the casual listener versus like the devoted listener. Same thing with brands, right? It's like the casual sort of consumer versus the very loyal, like will ride or die for your brand. So I'm curious, what were some of the things that you were doing on the organic side that you felt were able to like break through that noise and connect with a more engaged and authentic audience?
Yeah. So I think it was really rethinking the content we were putting out there. You know, CeraVe's developed with dermatologists. So we are a very medical focused brand. And TikTok is a very fun, relatable platform that, you know, I would say to any brand out there, you can't sell like openly on TikTok. You got to be yourself. Like it, you got to figure out what that personality behind your brand is, and that's how you're going to win. And that's what we did. You know, CeraVe's been winning for years, of course, but it was kind of applying that learning to our TikTok strategy. So one thing was specific product recommendations based on people's skin type. So again, I think another point was hyper-personalized content. So that's kind of what we did. We personalized the content for our consumers. And one way is by tapping into skin type. Another way is by answering comments directly. Another way was by showing how our products are made. So I went to our labs in New Jersey. I'm based here in New York City. And I showed like how this machine creates our products. For me, it was super fun. I'm sure you guys don't know. I didn't know. And so I created a video like that. So I feel like for any brands that can let their consumers into the experiences that are authentic and that are interesting, that's kind of how you start thinking about organic wins.
You also talk about how with the paid strategy, you're getting a lot of views. But you're looking at the comments and something was off. Mm-hmm. I think that's really interesting because like what it sounds like happened is that you got actually a ton of learning from the paid side.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh, I think like it's probably people complaining about some of the ads or missing things or things feel out of touch or whatever. But you wouldn't have heard that otherwise, I assume, if you didn't have something in market.
Yeah.
And then you figured out from that how to go organic. Do you think that is that what happened?
I would say more or less. We wanted, we saw so many, we're always benchmarking and learning against our competitors. And we saw, you know, these younger indie brands being super relatable on the platform. Okay. And, you know, of course, TikTok trends, everyone's tapping into them. Some brands are only doing TikTok trends. And, you know, my philosophy, I've been working in like kind of this space for a while doing freelancing before L'Oreal, was that trends are good to connect with your consumers, but they can't be all that you post, because after a while, people are going to want to follow you for your original series. And so what we did is we kind of created a mix of where we have trend-based content, you know, once a week or twice a week when we were starting this this new strategy out. But we also kind of developed those, yeah, as you were saying, in a way we did learn from, you know, of course, our past work of what had worked and what didn't, and kind of just tweaked those ideas a bit more, as well as develop new ones.
How did you create that relatable voice? Like, I think so many brands today who are looking to like put together a new series to really hone in on the voice that they use when they talk to their customers. Some of them obviously have a great starting place because they have the paid side. Some of them are like, where do we start? So like, how do you find the voice? How do you know the voice is resonating? What was your creation process like? And then like, how were you actually like kind of measuring your success?
Definitely. Well, I think like, from what I know about the world, I know like people do market research when they're developing a product. And I think we call market research in a way, I feel like in the social world, social listening. And I think that you have to do social listening and market research when you release a product, but you have to continue that. So basically, when I put in the organic strategy, I did a whole lot of that. I was looking, what are our consumers talking about? What, like, as you, Chris, were saying, like, from our paid assets, like, where is there a spark of, you know, an authentic comment and how can I build on that? And so I thought, put myself in the shoes of a consumer. You know, when you're in a big office space with fluorescent lighting, like, sometimes it's hard. You're just, like, in a different mindset. But I'm like, no, if I was scrolling through TikTok, what would I want to see there? You know, I think when you have a great product, you don't need to lie. You don't need to exaggerate all the time. Like you could just be authentic and you can show what makes your product unique and good. Doing it in an engaging way is another challenge, but I think we had an amazing product to work with. And it was just about, you know, listening to what our consumers wanted more of. And I also really encourage brands to do this by, you know, responding to comments. I think TikTok's an amazing platform, but of course, all brands should also be on every single social platform. So there's Instagram. One way that I've done this in like a lot of my past roles was by doing a lot of polling and Instagram stories. It's the best way to really talk to your audience, you know, or doing lives and saying, hey, comment. And maybe you get five people, but those are authentic recommendations that you can go back and apply. So I feel like any way you can interact with them is the best. Those are the best learnings for me.
And the videos that you're making, putting out there that are really authentic and showing behind the scenes, like, can you walk people through, you know, what the production looks like and who's on camera? And even I'm also thinking about like approval. Like you talked about management being aligned with the approach, like just that whole kind of process. If someone think of the viewer who's like, I want to do this. This makes sense.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know, should I do it on my phone? Should I do it on my computer? Should I check in on everything? Like, how do you, based on you've made this really successful, how should people think about that who want to try to figure it out?
Definitely. Well, I think it depends on what platform you're going for. But if you're going for TikTok, the way that I do this basically is I create, well, basically we see on TikTok is that lo-fi assets perform just as well as assets that we spend a lot of money creating. And that's like one of the biggest learnings of TikTok. So I will say a lot of the assets you see on our TikTok, basically 90% are created by me off my iPhone in my apartment. Sometimes I have a little marble background I ordered on Amazon. I have a little like small tripod. Everyone has CapCut. We have so much at our fingertips these days. It doesn't take a whole lot. You don't need to have a huge budget to get started. You just need to have a creative mind, someone who understands, kind of willing to look at what works, test and learn. I always am thinking, I know it's all out there, but the hook is, of course, very important, the first 5 seconds. And keeping it short, keeping it tight. That's one thing I learned from stand-up comedy and joke writing. And then, yeah, it's just me editing, work with what you have. So I also create, if I'm in the office, I grab employees and we don't necessarily like, at CeraVe on the TikTok highlight, like always the employees' personalities, although that's one tactic some brands use, but I use our employees to talk about their skin type. So let's say I have an employee, like a coworker with, oily skin or acne prone skin. I'm like, hey, can you come film an acne prone skin routine with me? And we'll go into the bathroom again, authentic. It doesn't need to be a huge production set. And we'll film it and I'll be there with the camera. I'll be doing a little bit of directing, but it will just be like, we see UGC content. It works so well. And that's just an authentic consumer using our products and their routines. And I applied those learnings and, just lo-fi content, I will say, wins on social platforms. So,
and what about approvals? Like, let's say you're taking a risk with the brand. When do you think I should go get approval for this thing?
I would say never hurts to get approval. Always, you know, as they say, I think, what is it in the corporate world? Cover your ass, as they say. Always get approval. When you're being, when you're in the social world, you know, you have to take risks. And I think you need management to be behind you and be willing to take those risks with you. But that also starts with having a good boss and a good manager that's going to support you, that also understands. So I would say raise it, but make sure you're also in the right environment, because it takes a little bit of risk and you need a team behind you to support you and be willing to test and learn. And I would say approval. Yeah. When in doubt, get it approved. Why not? You know, but be bold, be there. If you have different feedback, if you disagree with something that's been going on in your company for years on the social, like for social, and there's something, be like, I think we should try this different, and try it 3 times, try a new series, and then be like, oh, did this work or did it not? You know, I think that's one thing about social media. You can always look at the metrics, see what happens. But test it a few times. And how I do it is basically I'll do a pitch deck to my boss. I have like ongoing concepts where I'm just always pitching ideas. I'm always learning from others. I'm always coming up with them. Go outside of the office if you're trying to think of creative ideas, though. Take a walk, like really, you know, just get into the elements. And then I pitch them, I go and make them. And then that's that. But when in doubt, get approval.
Have you ever had any ideas that were like, you're like, this is too crazy, but you like went for it anyway?
I would say in past roles I have, Royal's a pretty big company. I don't know. I think like, you know, for example, street interviews, like working in the social space, like you see people do crazy stuff. Yeah. Like it doesn't work just to put a little bit out there anymore. You gotta like, you know, really show it all and be authentic. So I think like for other brands, like when I was freelancing, like I remember I had a brand and I thought of this idea, like, let's go on the street and scream this and see the reaction, you know, and being bold and really being different, because it does take risks to create, you know, viral content. So in that way, yes, but no, know where you are. Don't get yourself into trouble, but do take risks. But you can calculate how big that risk should be depending on your environment.
What do you think brands are getting wrong about social media? We've talked a lot about like what brands can do to get it right. Are you seeing things that you're like, oh no, like they are missing the mark. They're not understanding the landscape.
Yeah. I would say being too salesy. I know it's been traditional marketing to do that, but that will not work on TikTok especially. And it won't work on most social platforms because on social platforms, you have people following their friends for the majority, right? Or influencers or people they just like enjoy their lives. And then you have brands trying to sell stuff and get their messages across. And you need to fit into that language. So the best way is to tap into the personality behind the brand and to create that, you know, type of engaging, authentic content that will resonate. So that's one thing I would say, don't be too salesy. But my strategy is work in the product at the end. So hook the viewer with an interesting, you know, little phrase. Like I remember one successful TikTok that we had is stop cleansing your face the wrong way. And then had a dermatologist speak on the right way to cleanse your face. So hook them like that, you know, share something authentic and then give great advice, give like actually something of value and then share your product. Because if you have a great product, as I said earlier, like it shouldn't be that difficult to spread the message. But I would say work it in the product at the end of your asset.
You talked about this earlier and you kind of referenced it again, but let's talk about hooks. So can you give us some examples of hooks that work that you found for you all?
Well, we just heard one. Stop doing it wrong. Stop.
maybe you can give me a product and I'll give you a hook for it. Or
ooh, yeah.
Or like flowers or something. And then I'll think of, okay, what would I, how would I
mean,
I
don't know
this?
Why I'm thinking of like Coca-Cola, but.
Okay. Well, now I'm thinking about Olipop and Poppy and all the alternatives.
Okay, then do one of those if that's better. Go for that.
Do that.
Okay, so I would say start, if there's a visual hook, that is always really great. So that's the first thing I always look for. So like, for our products, if there's like foaming, if it can like foam a lot, or if you're working in the beauty space and you have a mask that's like peeling, oh my gosh, we see that work so well. Or like any kind of like example, like people love watching pimple popping, like Dr. Pimple Popper, he was so big. So get a visual hook, you know, and then again, share your story. So that's one thing I'll always look for. And then two, I would say like, try to think of like, okay, is it something authentic that you're selling? And what is that? So like, I guess like if I were to think of like my career and think of it as like a hook, I'd be like how I didn't go into, what was everyone doing at the time? Consulting. And I trusted my gut and I went for a creative career, you know, and how, what has it been 6 or 7 years since college, it paid off, you know, or something about like immediate satisfaction versus long-term. Or if I was thinking back to your Coca-Cola, that's a hard one because they really killed the marketing back in the day, you know?
Yeah. So, well, I mean, maybe that's like the opening consumers. Of the can and like the spritzing or like, it's even interesting to think about the visual hooks because I think people don't go to that. Like if you haven't done this, you know, we've jumped into this conversation where we're talking about video, we're talking about social specifically, and then we're talking a lot about like short form vertical video on platforms where like the engagement of the content, the uniqueness of the content is what causes it to take off, right? Like TikTok is not all about subscribers. It's about what is the most engaging thing. That's what wins. Definitely. And so we've zoomed in. And then I think it's even interesting, like for someone who's thinking about starting this, like your point of like, well, showing them something really interesting visually might be what it takes to get someone to start watching something that maybe it's 30 seconds, maybe it's a minute. But if without that visually interesting thing at the beginning, it may not work.
Definitely. 100%.
It's really interesting that that was like your first sort of like your first go-to in terms of hooks because, and Chris, I wonder if this is your experience, but just thinking about B2C versus B2B, right? Like Wistia is in the B2B industry. Lots of other SaaS companies are figuring out how to show their product. It's not like a product that froths or a mask that peels. So like, is there something that you feel like B2B could learn from B2C or like, how you would think about representation, visual sort of hooks differently if you're talking about software? That's kind of a hard question because you're not.
Yeah.
You're not in B2B.
Like software. I would say what it does. Like another thing that I use for hooks all the time, I think this relates to software. You guys tell me because that's not my forte. But like SEO, like what are some of the web's most searched questions we did a series on? And, you know, I used some of those platforms like SEMrush.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys are familiar. But yeah, so like I didn't know much like about SEO, but of course it's another way of doing social listening. See what your consumers are searching for. You can even just use Google, you know, for this. I think there's Google Analytics or something that you can search. And so look at what's like, if you are trying to sell t-shirts, what are people Googling about t-shirts? What are they looking for? Is it softness? Is it the cut? Is it the shape? Is it the price point? And then depending on your product, then start your hook around that. And so like, for example, another cleansing example, I realized people were really searching a lot how to cleanse their face after working out. So I made a hook and I filmed with a dermatologist. Here's the best way to cleanse your face after working out. Simple, but guaranteed there are going to be people continuing to search that because I already used the data to find that. And I use that as my hook. So that's another great technique.
I love that. I love that example of like going and doing a bunch of research, finding the exact thing. And then saying,
yeah,
because you're not going to, I imagine you're not going to make a thing if you don't think that it has a hook.
No.
Yeah.
No.
And it's just a very different, I think a lot of folks who are trying to figure this out, especially from B2B, that's just not the way that you think by default. You can think like this way once you've done it enough, but getting yourself to that place is really interesting. I'm like, all right, I know people are searching for this. I know I need something visual. I know there's like an expertise element involved. I know it needs to be authentic. So I'm going to put this all together. My hook is going to be this question. I'm going to go find the dermatologist and interview them. And then it's going to give me the best chance that this thing is actually going to kick. Like it's actually going to go.
Definitely.
That's very cool.
And I would say a piece of advice to someone who wants to, you know, switch to organic from paid, who's a little bit worried because it is a big risk. You know, I think we were just thinking about ideas. I think, you know, maybe you're not ready to share them with your boss just yet. But I always have a notes going on my computer and write down the ideas of what you think would be a little small risks you can start taking. Then look at other brands that are kind of, it's always good to back it up with examples. You know, look at what other brands are doing. See an example that has worked. If you, TikTok's a great platform to search, you know, most top viewed or most top engaged. You can find all of that really easily. You know, put that, depends on how your company works. For me, put it on a slide. And then come up with 5 ideas and then share and be like, I had this idea. We've seen it work for other brands. Like, let's try it. But always back it up with, you know, a finding. And then I would always end it with, it's a risk. It's social media, you know, but let's see.
I love that. I love that. I'm trying to think of what else B2B can learn from B2C, because it does seem like that's how some of the best marketing happens in B2B,
oh, yeah.
Right? Like it happens in
B2C always is first. B2C is always first.
Yeah.
And then eventually B2B figures it out. And it's how quickly can you jump on it in B2B determines like how much of a head start you have based on everybody else. And yeah, as you're talking about this, I'm thinking about like, what are the visually interesting things in your product that like mm-hmm. might by themselves cause someone to pay attention? I think a lot of the AI products, that's what's worked so well, is you see like,
yeah.
you see this like stream of text or magical stuff happening. You're like, oh my God, this, yeah. I've never seen this before. And so it's like the hook is that, and then it like sticks, you know, yeah. sticks with you.
Yeah,
I think it's also like what's worked for us at Wistia is when we're doing product-centric videos is showing someone actually like a real person using the thing and their emotion and their like frustration or their delight or like their pain. And like the software is almost like secondary to the person experiencing the mm-hmm. issue.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the thing about B2B that most people forget is like it's all human beings. And actually, if I can help you with something and that like helps your job, like that's really good for you, right? Like if that means that you grow more, you get more leverage, you get a promotion, whatever, like we care deeply about that. So it's like the emotion around that is often what's not talked about. And I think I will probably leave this conversation thinking about like, what's the equivalent of like the foaming thing? Like that's what it's yeah. such a like visceral thing that we can,
exactly.
that you can picture and that like we've yeah. all been like sucked in by. So like, what's the equivalent of that in B2B is like a really interesting question.
Definitely. And I think that, you know, with AI and CGI out there, like the CGI is very expensive still, but one day it won't be. There are so many ways that even if your product doesn't have like a visible, like, let's say it's just like a t-shirt and like, I don't know, maybe it doesn't have like that. I keep using t-shirts as an example. I'm just thinking like a plain Hanes t-shirt, you know, like how to market the most general thing. But you can think about how to use technology that's out there in these softwares to put a visual element on that. So I feel like CGI, I don't know, I'm sure you guys have seen this on your Instagram, but like the puppies coming out of scoops of ice cream, like obviously so CGI, but like, I really do.
The generative video stuff. Yeah.
We launched
a couple of weeks ago, we launched in Wistia, you can dub videos from one language to another. So like if I'm talking in English, you can like create a version of me. It's just exactly the same, everything you said, intonation, but now I'm speaking Spanish, and it reworks the lips so that it like matches. This is quite visually interesting.
That's amazing.
And so it's done incredibly well because like, I think you can instantly see it and feel it. But yeah, I think a lot of that stuff is interesting because like the puppies kind of out of ice cream is like remarkable. Like we've never seen it. Mm-hmm. And in like a year, we'll probably be pretty tired of that. So it's going to be like, what is actually the most, it's probably going to be like, what's the most creative thing, most well done thing that ties. Like, it's just interesting to back to your point of this constant change.
Definitely. And I think what you just said about, you know, Wistia's new feature about being able to change the language of the person, I think that plays so well into kind of what I was talking about with the hyper personalization of content. Because for me, I sit on the global team at L'Oreal and CeraVe, which means we serve the markets around the world. And how we can personalize the assets to those markets is another thing we really have to think about. And I think for brands, you know, we think about TikTok, the For You page. It's number one of personalization out there. So I think features, as much as you can use like software and technology, like you were just saying, like to change the speech to Spanish for that market is incredible. That's going to resonate with your consumers so much more than putting just captions. So that's super awesome.
Yeah, it's cool to see how quickly things are changing. And I'm kind of zeroing in on this change piece because you talk about it like it's not a big deal. Like it's kind of exciting. Like, yeah, like, you know, where you're like, oh, well, like every 3 months, like the rules are different. So like, and you do seem optimistic. So tell me, like, I think, again, this is one of those things that feels often extremely intimidating to people.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it not
like the frequency of change,
the volume of change? Why is it not intimidating to you? Like, what do you know? What do you trust in your gut that allows that makes you feel good about this?
Well,
I'm speaking from the other side of success. You know, it could have gone one way or the other. And I always think about, you know, life that way. But I will say that it's, I don't know, like playing it safe is just not that interesting to me. This is, you know, like my one life. I think, you know, I come from a place of maybe it's, I don't know. Sometimes I'm like, I'm not fully narcissist. Sometimes I'm an insecure narcissist. You know what I mean? But like to do stand-up comedy, you need to be like a little confident. Yeah. So when I tap into my confident self, I'm like, oh yeah, you know? And I've put myself in environments that have been accepting of, you know, different creative ideas, which has been great. Not saying it's always been easy. This is not a traditional career at all, in many ways, but, I say, yeah, this is your one life. Like if it doesn't work out, apologize and go back to normal. You know, what's the big deal in taking the risk, you know? And I think fear is normal. It's normal to have fear over many things. I scare myself all the time, to be honest, in little ways, but I like that. Like you feel alive, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, don't do something crazy, but little ways, like, you know, okay, like, is this asset going to work? Like worst case, we'll go back to posting the series from the other day. You know, if it doesn't work, we can always delete it. We can take it down. Don't do anything like too risky that's going to, you know, ruin the brand, of course. But I do think it's important to take risks, and especially in the social space. So
I love that answer. And then talking about taking risks, you just actually said something, which is like, well, this isn't going to ruin the brand.
Yeah.
Let's dig into that. Because again, a lot of people think, I've heard this basically since we started Wistia, which is like, well, if I make a bad video, I'm going to hurt the brand. And I think actually like people have much more of a tolerance for things going sideways and short memories and all this kind of stuff. But tell us what you mean by that. Like, why wouldn't one video, like if it goes wrong, hurt the brand? Like, tell us like why it doesn't, and like how you think about that really.
Well, I would say a lot of people, like a lot of brands, have come back from mistakes. And, you know, I wouldn't do anything offensive, of course. But if you're making a piece of content where you're showing, let's say you're going on the street and you're asking a user to authentically respond to your new product, and they say something and then someone else has a different opinion and the comments go crazy, you know, about like, oh, well, they said this, they said what's true, you know, well, every talk is good talk. I don't know. You know, there are people talking about it now. Let's go find out the answer. So it's the start of a conversation. And maybe that's somewhere deeper to dive into. You know, no one wants to see the same content. So you have to be unique and you have to take a risk to do that. And I would say if you do make a mistake, you know, it's always good to talk about it. Be like, well, we thought this, but then it was really that. And here's why we thought that and went with that. If you're being a good person and you're not being bad and malicious, you know, you should be able to talk about it and to discover the ups and downs. And I think that's part of it in marketing. And that's why we see platforms like one of Poppy's success stories, I think, was that the founder, the CEO, went on TikTok and shared how she developed the product and shared what was behind it. So people are craving this, you know, people are craving to see every single step along the way for brands. And you should share that story as much as you can, because it's an easy way for me.
Would you say that basically, like, the way you look at it is that if you make a mistake, as long as you're willing to follow up with it and like continue the conversation, it might not be that big of a mistake. And it's actually probably you make a mistake and you never address it. That's where you could actually go wrong. Do you agree with that?
Well, a mistake, let's say you're getting millions of views on a video and then one video gets 2,000. Like, okay, million into a 2,000 is a big change. But, you know, make a video being like, oops, we did this. We thought this was going to work out, but it didn't. Like, do you guys know why? I would say use the things as much as you can to create more content and to figure out and solve why it didn't work.
Yeah, because I've definitely had the same experience where there's been really big creative risks that we took. And we went into them eyes wide open. Okay, if this doesn't work, we're gonna write about how it failed, and we're gonna talk about how it failed, and like probably that will do well because it's so authentic and real, and it gave us the confidence to go for some big stuff. And I think about it a lot because like when you have that, it's not a cheat code, but it does give you this extra ability to just go for it. And it's cool to hear you talk about it that way, and that's what you're seeing as a B2C brand. And that's like an existing brand that's part of this huge, incredibly well-known business that you still feel that same way about risk-taking.
Yeah, no, I do. And that's what you just said is like a great thing. You know, I always thought about this in terms, you know, I think my background in stand-up comedy obviously shapes me and how I think about content. And I think, you know, you say a joke and you have to try out that same joke many times before you get it to work. We see comedians who are famous do that each night. I go to the Comedy Cellar all the time in New York City. Monday night is like new joke night. And you see these comedians rework these jokes for months before they go on tour. And so if you think about content, you think in a similar way, you know? The problem with social is sometimes people want it overnight, people want it fast, but you can rework your series and your content ideas, learn from your failures, and don't always see it as like a complete failure. You were just saying that, like learn from it, take the learnings and continue to run with what worked and scrap what didn't, you know? And I think that applies to many different areas of life, but especially when you're thinking about content, and it's definitely something I've learned from, you know, being on stage and working reworking jokes like nightly, and then finally getting them to stick.
Oh, that's
how often do you go to the Comedy Cellar?
Oh my gosh. Well, I used to go once a week, but I've cut it back. I try to go like once every 2 to 3 months. I love it. I just went when SNL 50 was happening in New York City because
it was probably an insane lineup.
I waited with a friend.
You've done all of the greats.
We saw Ray Romano and Aziz and who else? A few others. But yeah, I knew it was going to be a good weekend. And I was like, okay, we need to go wait in line. It's the best. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, Sydney,
very cool.
This has been an amazing conversation. We're going to jump into the rapid fire section now. So I have a few questions for you. What's a book, show, or podcast that you can't stop recommending?
A book. I would say Think Like a Monk by Jay Shetty. Mm,
never read it.
Mm.
Very interesting.
Amazing book.
Okay. Add it to the list. That'll be delivered here in 30 minutes. what's the most unexpected lesson you've learned in the last year?
I knew I could continue being authentic in my real life, but seeing it work, I keep talking about authenticity, but seeing it work in video production and, you know, with that change to organic content, continue taking risks and work past your fear every day. Fear is not a bad thing.
Amazing. Sydney, thank you so much for being here. Where can people connect with you to learn more?
Yeah, Sydney Rafe on LinkedIn. You can follow me on Instagram too, but it's different there, you know.
It's different
on Instagram.
Different objectives.
I love how excited Sydney is. And, you know, I mean, she's got to figure it out. Like authentic, real content, showing up, trusting your gut. I mean, we're speaking the same language. What a fun guest.
Truly, she can speak savage. Mm-hmm. It was very cool to hear how her stand-up comedy career has influenced her creative career as a video producer, and just that habit of like taking risks and perfecting jokes and applying that to social media, taking risks, learning from your audience, iterating on the idea, and then, you know, serving up some content. I loved the connection there. I thought that was super cool. You know, we talk about this on the show a bunch about like what B2B can learn from B2C. And I feel like there are some really good takeaways for folks on marketing teams who are looking to like experiment with their social media content. Did anything jump out at you?
Yeah, for sure. Like TikTok is an extreme version of this. YouTube Shorts is trying to do this. Instagram Reels is trying to do it. But basically that the subscriber doesn't matter as much. Like the follower count is factors in, but it's much, much less than it used to. And instead it's about how do you make content that actually sticks out and is truly engaging, right? So it's almost like what was the thumbnail or the title or the subject line of the email is now the hook. So what's mm-hmm. the hook? And so when Cindy was talking about the hooks and thinking first and foremost about what are the hooks that are going to match what are other people already searching for and thinking about? And then secondly, like what is the visual hook piece? I thought was just so interesting because when you start to, if you've made a lot of content for social, you start looking for that and you start seeing it. And it's often like really surprising things. Marcus Brownlee, you know who he is, like the tech reviewer.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
MKBHD. I'll watch his stuff every once in a while. I like trust him. And so it's like nice if I'm like looking up some tech, some new thing that I came across one of his videos the other day and it's him just talking to camera, but he popped out of some bushes. He was like in some bushes and just came out like pushing through them and then just gave a regular talk to camera. And it took me like 30 seconds to realize like, wait, did he start in the bushes? Was that his hook? And I went back and I was like, oh, that is what he did. And it was just so interesting because only because we've been making all this social content, did my brain even think to register that that was odd.
Yeah.
When the idea of it sounds absurd. Like I'm going to explain this thing. This is just a normal tech review, but I'm going to start in the bushes and I'm going to like creep out. And like, that's his visual hook. And so it's just,
excited you are right now.
I think similar to Sydney, it is exciting to try to figure this stuff out. It's like a creative problem to solve.
Yeah.
And so, yes, it hadn't even occurred to me until this exact moment that I think I've been more aware of this because we've been doing it. And then she's talking about it. Then it brought back that memory. So that's, yes, you know, I just get excited. I get excited about learning.
Talk too loud.
I'm a passionate person.
You are. I got to go record some videos, just popping out of bushes. I'm ready.
Yeah.
I'm ready to take some risks.
Well, it's also just like not to go too far down this rabbit hole, but I think that we underestimate how weird and different you can do something in person. It feels might feel incredibly uncomfortable that on camera doesn't. It's just like, you know, it's like dumping a thing over your head and then starting to talk. And it's like, do I really want to get wet? I don't know. How cold is it? But like on camera,
A/B test that I would love to do. Just like 10 weird hooks, 10 absurd hooks. Okay. Yeah. 10 absurd hooks.
Yeah. Oh my God. You're snorting. It's back.
I'm thinking of you with like a chicken on your head.
Yeah.
Well, it's bringing me a lot of joy.
We'll have to try that.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, anyway, yes, lovely episode, really fun conversation. If you want to listen to more fun conversations, watch more fun conversations like this, please subscribe to Talking Too Loud wherever you watch or listen to podcasts, YouTube, on wisdom.com via email, on any podcast app. Of course, if you have ideas for us, like guests you think we should have in the show, questions, you can find Sylvia and I both on LinkedIn. That's where we spend a lot of time. You can also email us at talkingtooloud@wisdom.com. And I think that
is
all she wrote.
It's all she wrote. And murder. Murder she wrote.
Murder she wrote. Murder in the building.
Murder on the dance floor. Okay. That's enough.
Okay.
Talking Too Loud is brought to you by Wistia. Hosted by Chris Savage. Produced by me, Sylvie Lubau, along with Adam Day. Executive produced by Wistia Studios. This episode was mixed by Maria Passingham of Edit Audio. Listen to Talking Too Loud wherever you listen to podcasts. And hey, rate and review us wherever you listen. And check out more content from Wistia Studios at wistia.com.